Oketo world. Today's daf, get that. Today's daf in the Sechet Chulin brought to you from Eretz Chemda Tevor Chava is daf Samach Zayin. And can you believe it? We are on the final daf of Eilat Treifas. Woof. It's been a long journey. Okay, so we got up to yesterday, we went through the two different limudim of the brises. We had the brise of the Beirav from the Sifra, and then we had the brise of the Tana Deferi Bishmo, and they took very different approaches. So remember that the first brise that we had brought, which was the Sifra, that was the Taras Kayanim, which is called the Beirav, that led us to read the entire pasuk as a list of various species, in which we have the four species that are mentioned, and then each one of them has a mino or a mineu that's attached to it that expands it. And that left us without any basis for extending the din into the type of chagav that has an elongated head, one of those stick insects. According to that, none of them would be mutter because none of the examples that were given in the pasuk were actually stick heads. On the other hand, we had the approach of the Tana Deveh Rabbi Shmuel, who used the pasuk as a series of klal and prat and klal. And how did he manage to do that? If you recall, he took the opening, the pasuk that said anything that has the kra'ayim, which we call here the kartzulayim. Then it listed various minim, and attached to each one of those minim, it said either lemino or lemine. When we worked out that each one of those could be a klal, prat, or klal, it turned out that there were only two of them that really were a klal, prat, or klal that added anything to the discussion. And those were the two completely separate ones of the first arba. Then we thought that the second one, which was the Sol'am, was adding something because of the Gabachat, but then it turned out the Chargol already added that, plus added the Zanav. Therefore, we realized that the Sol'am wasn't necessary, and it was the Arba and the Chargol, which was the full extent of what we needed to learn. So we had the four simanim that were given by the original list in the Torah, and then we had these additional issues that we were taught we could effectively ignore. Does it have an ovipositor? Does it not? Does it have a growth of a hairy kind of fuzz on its head or not? So that's gabachat or not gabachat, zanav, not zanav. All that information would have been accessible if we only had access to arba and chargol, which meant that the Sol'am was actually an unnecessary pasuk if we were darshaning it as klal, prat, or klal. That left us the Sol'am to learn from an ime eno inyan to the one characteristic that's been left out. And that characteristic was the stick insect, the rosho aruv. And therefore, it turned out that according to the Tana Deveh Rabbi Shmuel, we actually had a mocker to include not only the type of chagavim, which share the four characteristics and also either do or do not have a gabachat or a zanav, but it also enabled us to say that we can expand beyond the envelope of the examples given in the Torah, and we can say that that extra pasuk so'am comes to include the rosho aruv. And that we did not have access to if we were going according to Toras Kohanim. Therefore, the Gemara concluded yesterday that the significant difference, la halacha, between these two approaches were all of those insects that have a long head. So there's major differences. That means that probably hundreds and hundreds of species, since there are tens of thousands of these kind of different insects, because a chashash that the number of actual species, which we know really a very small proportion of, may reach in terms of insects as a whole into the millions and millions. And fine, if that's the case, if there's tens of thousands of types of grasses, then there's probably tens of thousands of different types of grasshoppers of chagavim as well. So anyway, That was a very significant difference between the way that the Bryces learned it, obviously. So that left us with the questions of, and this is, gets a little bit complicated today, of whether we should darshan these psukim as a ribui miut ribui or as a klal prado klal. So remember that yesterday we learned a couple of very important things about klal prado klal. One of them was, at the end of the sugya, was that in Eretz Yisrael they say that where you have a strange klal prado klal, such as we have in these two psukim, and when I say these two psukim, both of them have a weird klal prado klal. Let me just get the pasuk so we can look at it inside. The reason that this klal prado klal is weird is because the two klalim appear together. Now, in the first pasuk, the two klalim are bamayim, bamayim, and they are followed by bayamim ubanechalim, which is the prado. So we're trying to learn which types of bodies of water, I should say bodies, which type of water are we demanding that we have the simonim of kosher dogim, which is snapir v'kaskeset, and which type of water do we not care whether they have those simonim? That's what we're coming to define. So the first pasuk has klal, klal, uprat. Bamayim, bamayim, banechalim, bayamim ubanechalim. But the second pasuk has it the other way around. It has zasher, the kol asher ein lo snapir v'kaskeset, bamayim, and there we have the bayamim ubanechalim, and there we have it followed with mayim. So there it says, mikol sheretz hamayim, mikol nefesh achaya, asher bamayim. So basically, we have over here in the first pasuk a klal, klal uprat, and in the second pasuk a prat, klal uklal. So in those strange circumstances in Eretz Yisrael, they said, turn it into a klal prat uklal by putting the prat beinehem and darshaning it as a typical klal prat uklal. The point is, however, and not everyone agrees with this, and there is a version of the Tana Dvei Rabbi Yishmael which tells us that even though normally it's Dafka Rabbi Yishmael who was the author of the Braita that we read all the time when we go through the Midosh HaTorah Nidreshes Bam, we read that every morning, and we learn that Rabbi Yishmael taught us about klal prado klal. So it's all of a sudden we're going to discover that there are places where Rabbi Yishmael doesn't hold we're supposed to darshan klal prado klal. And that's bedafka in these places where we have a non-standard klal klal uprat or prat klal uklal. That is not meant to be a prat, a klal prado klal, according to Rabbi Yishmael. And therefore he switches in these circumstances to the alternative methodology of the Torah. We've discussed this many times, in which we're being told, don't look at it as sets. Klal prado klal insists that the entire Torah is to be viewed as nidrash in terms of sets and not as specific examples and then amplifications and restrictions and so on. But that's only true where it's set up in the way that the Torah has it set up, either as klal uprat or as prat uklal or as klal prat uklal. But where it doesn't follow any of the structure of sets, according to this version of Rabbi Yishmael, there is actually an alternative, which is to utilize the ribui miut ribui approach. And that's what we're going to see today. So that means that the klal of how to darshan klal, which we saw yesterday, is not necessarily true according to all of the approaches of the Tana Dvei Rabbi Yishmael. So this is represents a tremendous innovation here in how to understand it. We're going to see that no matter how we look at it, whether we look at it as ribui miut ribui or we look at it as klal prado klal in the two versions of the Tana Dvei Rabbi Yishmael, ultimately the results are precisely the same, but for very different reasons. And that's always beautiful to see how sometimes different approaches yield the same results, but for very different reasons. And that's That's one of the most exciting things to see in science when that happens, when two mathematical issues converge and they yield exactly the same results. You can have geometric proofs that suddenly yield mathematical proofs that have been gone for thousands of years. And you can have alternative systems of mathematics that yield exactly the same physics results. Very famous examples. I'm not going to blabble here, but yeah, you know all of this, I'm sure. And this is another beautiful example in the Gemara of exactly that phenomena, which is so exciting because of the fact that it shows you the yichud that is there in the Bria and in the Torah in this, so many different ways in which you have the shivim punim, and that they can nevertheless yield precisely the same results as if they're in different universes and still come out the same. So these are exciting things. Okay, so let's take a look today at the alternative Braita of the Rebbe Yishmael. So here, holding on daf Samach Zayin Amud Aleph, what we got up to yesterday, Tevei Rebbe Yishmael Tana, this other Braita of Rebbe Yishmael, which clearly is not the same as yesterday's Braita, the Tevei Rebbe Yishmael Tana, this is about a quarter of the way down, that actually we have to darshan this as a Ribui Miyud Ribui. So, what we have is Bamayim Bamayim, Shtei Pa'amim, followed by the Prat afterwards by Yamimu Banechalim, that is telling you straight out, beep, Ein Zeh Klal Uprat. This is not meant to be darshan as a Klal Uprat because it doesn't follow the standard formulation of Klal Uprat, and rather you're meant to darshan this as Ribui and Miyut. So remember, Ribui and Miyut is totally different from how it is that we learn from it. A Ribui and Miyut doesn't see the Torah as written as sets. It uses specific examples, which are meant to be full examples of entire ways of inclusiveness. That's called Ribui. And in the event that there are specific examples given, they're not examples. They're not meant to be a definition of the way in which we saw the concept. They're meant to be actually specific restrictions, which are miyutim, that tell us don't include literally everything, which you would have included because of the Ribui. You've got to say that something or another, which is the most ridiculous thing to include, the most dissimilar to the example that was given, that model is actually there in order to restrict it with one step. So that we don't come out with a klal prat uklal idea at all. So if we have the Ribui and Miyut, so here's how we would learn it. You start off in the pasuk by saying ba mayim. So okay, that's riba. And that would mean that any type of water would require the kaskasim as your tzimin, and the snapir, which we said always goes automatically with the kaskasim. But then it says, now I don't really mean b'mayim as a totality. I'm giving you a model of yamim and nechalim. So that is a miyut. Then when you have a mayim that is chazar v'riba, that gives you a riba miyut riba. And the rule about riba miyut riba is that it is marba absolutely everything except for one completely dissimilar to the model case. So what would it be marba? My Rabbi, it would be marba for the need of snapir v'kaskeset, every type of water, except, and that would include charitzim, ni'itzim, it would include these ponds that we spoke about yesterday, or any type of flowing water channels. But what would be excluded, my miyut? What's the thing that is very dissimilar from the example? Now, you know, and I know, that what's very dissimilar is your Brita water bottle. But for some reason, we're going to skip over the Brita water bottle, and we're going to go directly to Borot Shekhinu Ma'arot. Now, that doesn't make any sense, and the Gemara, of course, will question it in a moment. But this comes to exclude from the requirement of snapir v'kaskesed anything which is inside of Egborot, Shichin, Marot. Now, these are standing waters, cisterns or pits or Marot, which would be is the equivalent, except it's inside of a cave and so on. And that's the standing water which is held in the ground. Wait. How'd you do that? Yes, the Gemara, that doesn't make any sense. If we're only going to exclude one item, then that item has to get back into my breeder water filter again, right? So how did we get to say this is, after all, a riboy miyad riboy, and therefore we're only able to exclude the most far-fetched, non-similar item to the pasuk? Pasuk talks about the seas. Well, the breeder water filter is about as far as you can get from the open sea. That's what we should exclude. And there in that, if we have bugs, then they don't require a fin and they don't require scales, but they can be just had and enjoyed. So why do we include over here all of these borot, shichin, umorot? Ask the Gemara. What we should say is, on the contrary, since what we're doing over here is we are darshaning a riboy miyat riboy to include iser. Remember, all the things that are in need of snapir vekaskesa, unless it's dissimilar in total, it's dissimilar to the case of bayamim ubenachalim. So what should be excluded? Kalim. So we should say, ve'ema, my riboy should include in the requirement, and aser anything without the snapir vekaskesa said, if it's borot, shichin, umorot, li sura. And what should it exclude from that requirement? Only kalim. No? Ah, true. Of course that's true. But then remember, we've got that extra pasuk. And that is, that makes no sense to say, etzet tochlu mikol asher b'mayim, since the pasuk listed it and ended with the words, otam techelu. Right? So why did you say at the beginning, etzet tochlu? You have two psukim that make a list. The second pasuk ends with the words sheket seim lachem. The first pasuk ends with the words otam tochelu. Why did you begin with the words etzet tochlu? That's coming to tell you, expand what you otherwise would have said, namely, only water filters are kosher. I mean water bottles, obviously. Like, we're talking about the filters because later today we're going to deal with the filters, actually, literally. But the water bottles, those are the things that would be kosher even without the snapir v'kaskeset. And that's what we would have said. But since otam tochelu adds extra things that you could include in the heter, you can eat, that's the heter, so therefore we'll expand it by one notch. One notch adds borot, shichin, umorot, and therefore we will include it. Because im kein, if I would exclude it, tochlu mayahanile. How would I explain the extra word of etzet tochlu? So it turns out, Rabosa, that both approaches of the Tana Devei Rabbi Shmuel utilize the tochlu as a riboy to add one case. The difference is that one added it because of klal prado klal, and one added it because of miut riba miut. Because if it wouldn't have been for the otam tochelu, and remember, we understood that the Tana Devei Rabbi Shmuel does, we proved that the Tana Devei Rabbi Shmuel holds that a klal prado klal has to be defined restrictively because the opening prat, klal uprat, is the ikar, according to Rabbi Shmuel, remember? Because in the need for chargol, we said, well, if you only need for it to be similar to the prat in one way, why couldn't we have even learned chargol? Remember, all of these sugyas are deeply interrelated. So we proved from the Tanit, I hope I'm not losing you, because this is like one of really the most beautiful sugyas in Shas, to see the details of how these limudim fall into each other so lovingly. So the klal prado klal, we proved earlier when we were dealing with the need for the shrutim, for the chagavim, So we showed that according to the Tanya Rabbi Shmuel, the opening klal was the one that was central, and because of that, it would have been limited, remember, except that it says at Zetochlu here. So that means whether I'm darshaning the klal prado klal in the original version of the Tanya Rabbi Shmuel, or I'm darshaning the miut ribui miut, in both cases, I'm going to need the otam etzet tochlu, but one I need for the purpose of restricted klal prado klal, and in the other version, I need it to tell me to actually expand the riboy miut riboy so that it doesn't exclude even the borot shechinu morot. However, that leaves us with one very important ish that we need to explain. And that is, what makes you say that we include the borot shichin, that we exclude the borot shichin umarot, and we include the cases of the, let's say, the niitzim, the pools and the flowing man-made ditches, not ditches, of channels for water, right? That's what we said, which makes a lot of sense. If, and only if, you're dealing with klal prat uklal. Because klal prat uklal looks for similarities, because it sets. So by definition, sets have to be similarities, right? Okay. So there I understand why I go in steps. Steps of, is it flowing water? Is it water on the ground? Is it water that it's included in the kalim, and so on and so forth. But where you're dealing with riboy miut riboy, we're not looking for sets. And therefore, I don't understand why it is that you look at the borot shichinu ma'arot as being bedavka, the things that you exclude. Maybe you should include borot shichinu ma'arot and exclude the cases in which you had the ponds, let's say the fish ponds or the water channels, because you don't need, according to this, you don't need to make things similar in terms of sets. And therefore, epochana, let me do it the other way around and say that, look, you know, it could be that the dafka, the borot, shichinu ma'arot, do need to have the klal of the and dafka, the, let's say, man-made cisterns, they're excluded. Maybe that's, it's not cisterns, I mean channels, they're excluded. Maybe that's the thing to exclude. I mean, we're not looking for working it out as we did in sets. So therefore, epochana, if you're dealing with ribui miut ribui, how do you know for sure which one is included and which one is excluded? Ah, that's the way Matitya Bar Yehuda taught us. The Tani Matitya Bar Yehuda. My Ra'ita, L'rabot Shikin, Borot Shikin Umarot Le'atera. What made you say, with this miut, this riboy miut riboy, what made you say that the Borot Shikin Umarot do not need the Snapir V'Kaskaset, and L'hotzi Charitzin V'Nitzin Le'isura? And you said that when it comes to these ditches, and I keep saying ditches, I mean channels that people dig out, or fish ponds, and so on, that those are usher if they don't have a snapir v'kaskeset. Maybe it should be the other way around, which was exactly what we were just asking, right? So he answers, marbe ani borot shichinu ma'arot shehim atzurin kikelin. Remember, the least similar object, which is how we deal with riboy miut riboy, was clearly your water bottle in the fridge. That is a totally different type of thing and doesn't share anything in common except the contents. And the Torah wasn't talking about contents because that was b'mayim. It was talking about structure. So the least similar structure was clearly kelim. Now you want to move on to the other question? The way to look at it, this is a very sophisticated understanding of Matitya ben Yehuda. The way to look at it is, what is the relationship of kelim to the mayim? The relationship is that liquids are defined by their containers. Anything that's not defined by a container, who cares? Who cares what it's looked like? Who cares if it's flowing? Who cares if it's on the ground? Who cares about anything? That is a liquid, an undefined liquid, and this is a defined liquid. That is definitive, says Matitya ben Yehuda. Therefore, if it's in a container, what's the difference if the container's in your fridge or the container's in the dirt? A pit is a container. A cistern is a container. There's no difference between kelim and containers. So therefore, we're only looking to be mamayit containers. Ah, I love it. Okay, so therefore, marbe ani borot shechinu morod, because those are included in the outside of not requiring, because they are atzurin kekelim. They're exactly like other containers. What do I care? I care about the difference in a liquid, but the point here is b'mayim, b'mayim. For God's sake, focus on your b'mayim, b'mayim. Okay. Al tomar mayim, mayim, remember. Oh my gosh. So therefore, these are atzurim kekelim, but I exclude from the need, I exclude from the heter, I mean, of not needing the snapir v'kas keset, anything which is not a defined liquid, and that includes charitzin v'nitzim, she'ein atzurim kekelim. Beautiful. Okay. You know the frustration of not being able to fully share. Anyway, so getting back to the original description. So we said in the Gemara before that, well, it was matir b'satum, and it was matir b'mufurash. Remember I said it's going to take us a couple days to figure out what the heck that was supposed to mean? So we're finally at that point. What did that mean? Which one of these posts? I mean, they're both the same thing, no? I mean, they're listing either a klal klal or prat, or a prat klal or klal, and they're both obviously limiting the requirement for snapir v'kas keset to the bayamim u'banechalim, and we had to darshan both of them, and we ended up with understanding what the yamim u'banechalim is a reference to, Mr. Brucey. And which, Mr. Brucey, Brucey, come home. Okay. So, both of them seem to be just as satum and just as mefurish. So, why is it that we're calling one satum and one mefurish? Which one did you mean? I satum, v'hai mefurish. That is a machlokas Rav Acha Ravina, how to understand the way that the Braita was looking at it. Which one is the mefurish? So one of them says, the pasuk that says, et elo tochlu, the one that talks about you're allowed to, so the yeshlo, which says you can eat it, that's the one that's mefurash. And the iser, don't eat it, the second pasuk, that one is not as clear. We're going to explain why. Whereas the other one says, no, the one that's clear is the ein lo, which is the law, this is what you do not eat. Kol asher ein lo snapir v'kas keset. But kol asher yesh lo snapir v'kas keset, that one is actually very unclear. And that we call satum. Why? It's exactly the same. My time at the Mandi Omer Yeshlo Meforash. So what would be the reason that we'd say the opening pasuk that says this is what you can eat? Why is that more Meforash when it says by Yamim Ubanachalim? Well, it's because that is the pasuk that we ultimately used to be Matir Kalim, isn't it? I mean, we started with it Elotochlu, that you're actually allowed to eat it. So we said, okay, you're allowed to eat those things that are not in the Yamim and Nechalim. So it's telling me, go ahead and eat it without the Simanim. So that's saying you can eat it. Isn't that clear? Isn't that more clear than saying what not to eat? It says, Beferish, go ahead and eat this. Whereas my time at Amandi Omer, Ein Lo Meforash, that you know why. Because when we originally tried to prove it from that pusik, we said, well, how do you know to read the pusik like that? Maybe what the pusik is telling you, that if it doesn't have simonim, that that if it even does have simonim, you can't eat it at all unless it's in Bayamim Ubanachalim. Maybe we should read it the other way. Remember we had that problem? And we said, no, of course it can't mean that. How did we know, of course it can't mean that? Only from the second pasuk that said what you're not allowed to eat. So over there, there was no way to limit it and telling us that you're not allowed to eat the things that are in Kalim. This year, it's telling you, Bedavka, no, only these things you're not allowed to eat if they're Bayamim ben Achalim. So it was only because of the second pasuk that we were able to properly understand the first pasuk. Therefore, he says the way to look at it is that the second pasuk is the one that explained it to us. So of course, so the other one was still open to the interpretation, because Hayu Dekamucha Chahecha was only the second pasuk that made it clear that the et zetochlu meant that you're allowed to eat the things in without the snapir v'kaskeset, and not that you're not even allowed to eat it with snapir v'kaskeset. Because if we would have only had the first pasuk, remember, we asked Avamina, maybe in Kalim, even if it does have snapir v'kaskeset, afagav the isle nami lo techol. That's why we needed the second pasuk. Okay, so now we've gotten through the understanding of these two psukim fully. Now the question is, we're talking about Shratzim, and that Sheket Zulachem, which continues on, as Barnea pointed out yesterday, into the next Sukkim, there's this Isser of Sheretz. And the Torah specifies in these Isserim, the Sheretz, if it's Bamayim, which is what we've been talking about here, which goes directly from kosher fish into Sheretz Bamayim, and where Sheretz Bamayim is Aser. And we've got the Sheretz HaShoretz HaLaoretz. And then we've got this long description of various types of bugs and different types of shrutzim, which may be rodents or mammals, all of these. Kol holech al gachon, v'chol holech al arba, ad kol marbe raglayim, l'chol hasheretz hashoretz al haoretz, lo tochlum ki sheketzein. So we've got another one of these long psukim with all these examples, talking about various things that slither along on their tummies and things that are have multiple segments of legs. So we have centipedes, that's the marbe raglayim, and then we've got insects that have four legs. Those are all things that are usher. So now, they're only usher, however, if they are sheretz hashoretz al ha'aretz. If they're not sheretz hashoretz al ha'aretz, they're not us. Now, we had already seen, if you recall earlier, a brief discussion of that issue, which was Shmuel's discussion about that special cucumber, that kishut, looks like a cucumber, and it had worms in it that grew in it while it was connected to the ground. Now, this was a general rule. Any type of pre or any type of veggie where the actual worms grew in it while it was on the ground, Shmuel's Chiddush is that even though the bug never broke out of the fruit in which it grew, it is still considered to be a sheretz hasheretz al ha'aretz, because it was crawling in the fruit while the fruit was al ha'aretz. That was Shmuel's Chiddush. And what we learned over there is that also any non-vertebrate can't survive for more than 12 months. And therefore, if you have one of these bugs and it is all still living and the fruit has been disconnected from the ground for 12 months, so the example was dates that he was talking about, if it's still moving, there's no problem in eating it because it was never sheretz hasheretz al ha'aretz, right? Okay, now, This brings us to another question. We've been talking about the fish water insects, and we said that if they were growing in a water bottle, so that then they would be mutter. Now, the question is, what if this is indeed a Brita water filter? Now, there we end up with problems. Why? Because as we pour the water through the filter, the insects crawl on the filter before they'll crawl back into the water, which means that now they're no longer in their natural environment because they already crawled on that cruel world that includes Brita water filters, found themselves in this artificial environment, and then managed to make it back into the cooling, loving water bottle when they got back off of the filter, right? So now we should always worry about that issue. So remember, let's say you want to take a nice long drink filled with water bugs and all kinds of stuff from your local cistern. And like we said, you can bend over and take a nice long drink in the water cistern. So then, this, by the way, is like a major issue today in New York City. I'm sure you've heard about that, right? That the water is infested with just visible tiny organisms, and that they were supposedly put through the filtration system of the city, and therefore they're usher. And now that means you're not allowed to drink water if you are a religious Jew in New York City. This is a major problem. Seriously. Anyway, so there's lots of people that won't drink that water. It's given a lot of additional income and excuses for buying those absurdly expensive, Italian mineral waters, which of course is the minimum that every two-year-old has to have after all, right? Yeah, those kind of schrotzim, Mari, we can't get rid of so easily. But one day soon. Anyway, so that's what we need to understand today. So let's say you're making beer. Now, beer in those days, of course, was made out of dates, as we discussed with Rav Papa, one of our most famous beer makers. And I've got a whole bunch of Papa beer in my house, all kinds of different versions of Papa beer packaged very beautifully. You ought to get on the internet and order yourself some of Rav Papa's beer, which is now being marketed in very colorful containers and so on. All right. But anyway, so Rav Papa's beer was... That was a paid political announcement. But Rav Papa's beer is made out of dates. Okay, so now there's bugs in the dates, as we know. So when you drink that beer, you've got to filter out the beer. So now the way in which you most easily filter out the beer, don't try this with your Brita water filter. Those are not the Brita beer filters. So how did they actually filter beer? So they use CV. CV means you made like this beautiful filter of chips of wood, and you let the beer flow over the chips of wood, and then anything that was in the beer would stick to the wood, and you'd get sort of a clearish beer at the bottom. So Tainas Ravuna, don't do the filtering at night. Lo lishpe inishikra b'tzivyata b'urta. So you should not pour your beer through your wood chip filter. Dilma porish le'el mitzivyata, because you might find one of those bugs. So you've got the wormy date, which got into the beer. One of those worms might actually be porish and take a little walk on a friendly wood chip before jumping back into a beer for the swim, right? But then, since it was walking on a wood chip, it was essentially walking on your Brita water filter. And that meant that it was a sheretz ha-sheretz ala aretz. Now when it gets back into the beer, hadar nafil lakasa, it might fall into your cup, which was right under your wood chip filter. You wouldn't know that. You would think that this is all a natural beer with natural bugs, and that would be fine because it grew in the beer, and therefore it would be the same as the bugs that were in your cistern or in your water bottle, and it would be mutter to drink, but it wouldn't be mutter to drink because of that little walk that they had on the woodchip promenade that was right above the beer glass. And you wouldn't know because it's dark. And then you'll be over Mishum Sheretz Hashoretz Al Haaretz. So this is Ravuna's Chiddush. Only do your beer filtering at night. But wait. So then even if it's in your original barrel of beer, how could you drink it? Maybe the bug crawled up on the side of the barrel and fell back in. So maybe it didn't have a wood chip promenade, but at least it had the size of a barrel, and that would have caused it to have the same iser. Dilma Parish Ladafna Demana Vahadanafalamana. Maybe it took a walk up the side of the beer and then fell back in. And now if you drink it, you're going to be drinking not what you thought, which was beer bug. You're going to be drinking Sheretz HaSheretz Al HaAretz bugs. So how can you do that? That's not a problem. The natural environment of an organism is not considered to be poresh. Just imagine, if you were a worm growing inside of beer, would you look at your friendly environment, which includes the edge of, I mean, this is the Truman Show. You're looking at the edge of the world when you're looking at the inside of the barrel. That's not an inhospitable place. It's a very hospitable place. So this is part of your natural environment. So everything has to be part of the perspective of the worm in the beer. To a worm in the beer, this is all part of natural worlds. And therefore, you never left that natural world unless you had the woodchip promenade that somebody put down. Now, that was never part of my natural world. So when I take a walk on that, strolling with my friend, I obviously have left my world, right? So, what's important is what is your natural habitat? And this is your world. And that was that old TV thing where they used to bring in worms and say, this is your life, right? I think it was something like that. Anyway, how do we know that this is true? Umino temra, because the braita that we had said beferish, minay in the rabot borot shichinu morot, sheshochev shotebiyam, how do we know that you could just bend down, take a nice long drink filled with water bugs out of a water cistern. Ve'eno nimna. You don't have to worry about all the stuff in there. Talmud lomar tochlu mikol asher b'mayim. Anything. It doesn't matter whether it has the snap beer v'kaskeset or it doesn't. How could the Braita say such a thing? Don't we have to worry that maybe some of those bugs crawled up the side of the bor and then they fell back in? So lechush dilma porish ledafna v'hadar nafil. But clearly the Pasuk is telling us obviously, then you would never know. So what's the point of the Pasuk telling you, otap tochemu? The idea is that whatever is in a natural environment, that is what is considered to be its world. And that's not called Sheretz HaSheretz Alo Oretz. So here too, it's the same thing. Ochanami, if you grew up, look, even if you grow up in Lakewood, you might think that's a natural environment. So if you grow up in a thing of beer, or you grow up in a water cistern, you'll also believe that this is nature, and you'll never be able to escape it. So if that's the case, Hainu Ravise, this would be its normal environment, and because of that, as long as it's in its environment, it's kosher. Omele Rav Chisda Ravuna, I can bring you a raya, actually, from the Braita. The Braita said, "Kol asheretz asheretz al haaretz, any type of sheretz on the land. This would include even yavchushin shesinanan. So if you've got these yavchushin, which are these little bugs that grow in wine, and you put them through a filter, once they get out on that filter, you're not allowed to eat them. Now, why did the Braita say dafke if they went through a filter? Because that's the only time that they're usher." Taima the sinanan. Well, just like you said, Ravuna, it's only because we put them through a filter that they're usher. Hello, sinanan. But if you never put them through a filter and they come together with the wine and they grew inside of the vat, there'd be no problem. Hello, sinanan. Sorry. So that means as long as they didn't go outside onto Sheretz HaSheretz Al HaAretz, then they would be mutter. And this brings us back to Shmuel's original maimer that we had before. Omar Shmuel, kishut shehit liah. If we've got one of those special, Barnea, remind me again, what kind of cucumber was it, Barnea?
It's on the tip of my tongue. I'll try and remember.
Yeah. I thought the kishut was in Barnea's neighborhood.
I have a picture of it.
Oh, no. What a disappointment. A picture. All right. I don't know. Barnea seems to be getting old, gentlemen. A senior moment. He doesn't remember what a kishut is.
No, Rebbe, he's just in a pickle.
Okay, so a kishut is not a pickle, but it's a certain type of, looks like a cucumber, and it got worms in it while it was still being bound, while it was still growing on the ground. It would be usher, even though the worms never came out, it would be usher, mishum asheretz asheretz ala aretz.
Serpent melon.
What's it called?
Serpent melon.
Serpent melon. Okay, what is it really? It's just a melon, but it looks like a
not serpent. Burp. It's a burping. It's like a zucchini. Burp. A burping cucumber. Barnea, you said burping, right? Not serpent.
Thanks. Anyway, we'll let Ori remember. Fine. So if it was wormy while it was on the ground, Shmuel Tainer, it was mutter. And it's aser because it is not considered to have grown in the cucumber. It's considered to have grown essentially on the ground because the cucumber was attached to the ground. So we're looking for a raya in a braita. Should we bring a raya from this? Lema misayel. Let us try to bring a raya from this braita. Tony Chota, one braita says, sheretz hashoretz al haaretz. That excludes. You are allowed to eat the zizin sheba adashim. So lentils have these kind of little bugs in them. Yitushim, which don't mean actually mosquitoes. They mean, again, small bugs that are found in humus, in kiselim, in ekeletsim. The worms that you find inside of dates or inside of dried figs. All of those things are not us. Why? Because they never were sheretz ala aretz. Whereas the other braita says, kol sheretz al sheretz ala aretz includes the worms that are on the ikre hazetim, that are right on the stems of the olives. That's what we think it means. Right at the point where the fruit connects, they're at the stem of the olives, they're at the stems of the grapes, and they didn't Shoretz ala aretz, and it says over here they're included at kol hasheretz hasheretz ala aretz. I'm assuming that when it says stems, it means in the peirot part near the stem. So it must be that the difference is both of them, idi beidi, are referring to the fruit and not to the wood, and one of them is talking about the fruit that was growing while it was still attached, and that's why it says it's aser, which is what Shmuel said. And the other one that says, no, you're allowed to eat it, is talking about where it grew after it was picked and it's not attached to the ground. Nah, come on. I mean, that doesn't make sense. The bright isn't talking about it. The bright is talking about a case where the fruit is still growing. It's still, maybe, I mean, I don't know. But when it says the stems, it doesn't mean inside the fruit. It means what it says, the stem. So one of them is talking about in the pre, maybe that's mutter even while it's still growing, not like Shmuel. Habapera, because the fruit is a different world, and it's growing in that different world, and it's not inside of the earth yet, of the aretz. And one of them, the bright side says it's usher, says the zayit, it says the geffen, it's referring to the tree, it's not referring to the fruit. And obviously, look, that's got to be what it means. I mean, it'd be medayik in the lashon of the bright, dekanami. Because what's the lashon? Tolad should be ikre zeitim, which should be ikre gifanim. What's nafkamina if it's close to the stem or not close to the stem? That doesn't matter if it's both in the fruit. Shema mina, that when it says the stem, it means the stem. It means the wooden part and not the actual fruit. And therefore, this has nothing to do with what Shmuel said. Sorry. Okay. So Shmuel says that it's mutter only if it grew in the fruit that is no longer attached. Okay, everybody agrees to that, right? Those things which grew when it was disattached become usher the moment that they go out onto the earth, and they become a sheretz hasheretz al haaretz. Now the question is, what is considered the bugs or worms' first foray into the world at large? Would it include, perhaps, just watching a video of what things are like out there? Would it include sticking a head out, looking around and saying, forget it, and going back in? What exactly is considered to be the sheretz hasheretz al haaretz? So, by Rav Yosef, what would happen if this little worm would stick its head out of the hole of the fruit, take one look and drop dead of a heart attack? Would it still be usher? Or would we say, what if it didn't really work? So it was pirsha umesa, it dropped dead on the spot. Or what happened if only a little bit of the worm looks around and decides it ain't going out and goes back in? Is that enough to be called asheretz al haaretz because it emerged onto the into the earth? And what if, in fact, it only looked through the avir ha'olam and it never walked? It actually did get out, you know, but before it had a chance to drop onto the ground, you came along and licked it off. Would it be usser? Or is that okay because it never actually walked on the ground? What would be the din? Teiku. Don't know. Boy, Rav Ashi, I got even bigger questions. Suppose we look at the inside of the fruit as consisting of various elements in which we have a kind of bug that grows inside of the garin, the pit of the date, right? I mean, like, what is considered to be its natural environment? So if it grows inside of a pit, is the inside of the pit its natural environment? If it grows inside of the date, then it's the inside of the date that's the environment. Like, how closely do we define this? So suppose the worm went to the gog of a tamara. And we're talking about, according to Shmuel, it grew inside of the date after it was no longer attached to the ground, and it just walked on top. It never got off of that date. So is the top of the date, is that considered to be a different environment? How about if it grew inside of the pit? It leaves the pit and walks in the date. Is it now inside of a different environment? So it could be called sheretz hasheretz al haaretz? Or is the whole date one thing? How about if there were two dates next to each other, and this very creative worm decides to explore the world by tunneling out of one date and digging a tunnel into the next date and gets into the next date? What say you, Tzuri, about that? So would that be considered to be going out of its local environment into the broad world, which, looks pretty much the same as it did back on planet date? So it turns out there's lots of inhabited planet dates. Maybe that would be still its normal environment, or is the very fact that it had to reach light speed to get out to that next date, well, for a worm it is that considered to be a different world? That's the question. All of these questions are tekus. Omer of Sheshes, parade of Edi. Now, Lamaisa, of course, if you're an Ashkenazi, the Ramah Paskins, even if there's a hole, you've got to assume maybe that it crawled out of the hole and then went back in. Oh, my gosh. That really is a tremendous chumrah. So, actually, the Rashba is matir that, but the Ramah, all right, we've got our problems all marked out for us. So anyway, any of these tekus are all users. They're just would not actually be mechayev yumalkas if you did it, and that would be the difference. But it would still end up being an iser because we're talking about an iser lavdi raisa, of course. Matkifla, sorry, Omer of Sheshibarei Ravidi. What about these kukianis? Now, kukianis, these are liver flukes or worms that are found inside of the lungs. They are considered to be usher. Why are they usher? If they grow within a natural environment, which to them is an animal of some kind, so this should be just as kosher as the worms in the beer that never walked out of their onto the beautiful wooden bridge over their beer. This should be the same. Their world consists of a liver or of a lung. So why would they be usser? Me alma us, because these don't actually grow in the animal. They are invasive parasites, and they crawl in from the outside and get in. So these are regular shrubs. Therefore, they're sherets, asherets, agave, oretz, and they're us. Says Ravashi, where do you get the idea that they don't grow inside the animal? The fact is that if they came from the outside, then they would have been ingested. And if they're ingested, we ought to find them in the digestive tract, don't you think? Well, we don't find them in the digestive tract. How do you explain that? Lishtakhu derech betarei, why don't we find them anywhere along the digestive tract? So apparently they actually grew in the lungs, or they grew in the liver. So I don't accept what you're saying, says Ravashi. But there's a different lashon that says this over in a different way, in which what Reb Shisha Bereder of Edi said, which shows that the first Girsa Reb Shishas Bereder of Edi is not accurate. Difficult to believe the Ikedi Amri changed Reb Shishas to Reb Shisha, especially considering that every time we find Reb Shisha Bereder of Edi, it's never Reb Shishas Bereder of Edi, which appears to be a mistake. So it's actually Reb Shisha Bereder of Edi. And this version has Reb Shisha Bereder of Edi saying that kukiani are kosher. Why? Dafka, the opposite of what he said before. Kukiani, those grow in the animal itself, and therefore they were actually growing in the lungs and the liver. And Ravashi in this version said, well, obviously, if they were invasive from the outside, we would have found them in the digestive tract. But the halacha is that kukiani are usser. And why is it that we don't find them in the digestive tract? Because you think the only way parasites get in is by ingestion? Heck, that's not true. My taima, minam naya va'ayalele bi'usye. These things can crawl in through the nostrils of a sleeping animal. It doesn't sneeze them out. And good heavens, we know parasites can get in just about from anywhere. It's a disaster. And therefore, they are not found in the digestive tract, but they go directly from the nose into the lungs or whatever. So therefore, the halacha is, it's usher. How about the darne, this word tolaim doesn't make any sense, seems to be a mistake. Darne de bisra. So if you find, now this was always the most incredible thing to me. You know that restaurant in Yerushalayim, that mist restaurant that was called Darna? Darna means worms. I could never understand. You got to be crazy. Who's going to go eat in Darna, for heaven's sakes? But anyway, so these were, I don't know if it's still around. Definitely not the best choice of a name for a restaurant. Gosh. So Darne de Bisra, if you find these kind of little worms, which are actually larvae, so these what do they call them? You know, the fruit flies. The house flies. What are those called? Come on, guys. Those little white worms. Oh.
Maggots, Ribby.
Maggots, right. So if you find them inside of meat, it's usser. If you find them inside of fish, it would be mutter. And Ravina said to his mommy, when she used to take out all of the worms that she found in his gefilte fish, he said, Mom, just make it really smashed up gefilte fish, and that way it'll all be bottled in the gefilte fish, and that way you've got extra protein, so you should go ahead, so just mix it into the fish, and I'm happy to eat it. You don't have to go to all this trouble. I thought that that's disgusting. My shlomi hadetanya, How come when it says et nivlatam tishaketsu, she says sheketz yulachem mibesaram, and over there it's mibesaram lotochelu, the et nivlatam tishaketsu, which Barnea was so concerned, why didn't we talk about this pasuk before? Here we go. So why is this any different than that? And that, with the Braita said, that that is gufa coming to be marbe, these diranim that were growing in animal flesh. What's the difference if it's animal flesh or if it's fish flesh? It should be the same thing, and it should be usher. Amalei, what are you talking about? You're missing the main point here. It's totally different situation because, look, a behema needs shchita to be mat, right? Now, these things that are growing in that behema, does shchita help for them? No, because there's no din of shchita on bugs. That, by the way, is a very important nekudah, because, and Rashi brings this from the Bahag earlier, which everybody wonders why he needs it from the Bahag, it does, they just need it. But anyway, Rashi brings it 2 days ago from the Bahag, when we were having our discussion of the Chagavim, that Chagavim do not require shchita. Okay, fine. So that is his source. The Rishonim bring it from all over the place, including the Gemara we had before about the Dugim only requiring it because we would have thought they would require it once we went down two levels, whatever. But anyway, in this case, the Shlita is not kosher on insects. So if those insects are in that behema, then what is going to make them mutter? But Dugim don't need Shlita. What is Matir Dugim? Simply picking them up out of the sea. And then, as Moshe Rabbeinu said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, imet kol digeya yam ye'as seiflehem. So what do you see from there? All you need to do is gather all of those fish. So fine, these things that are growing in fish are still kosher. Vahani ki kagavlan, as long as you're smushing them into the gefilte fish, behetera kagavlan. And therefore, why should I put my mother through hell in needing to clean out all the fish? Let her make extra protein gefilte fish. Tana Rabbana, kol holech algachon. Without the kol, a holech algachon is anything that creeps along on its tummy, which of course is fundamentally the nachash. And what is the kol? The kol is anything that looks sort of snaky, which would include even worms, segmented worms, earthworms, l'rabot ha-shilshul v'tadomel ha-shilshul. If it walks fundamentally on four legs, even though it's got extra legs that do all kinds of things, as most bugs do, so, but if it's holech al arba, so that would include even a scorpion, where even though it's got actually eight legs, but it walks fundamentally on its four major legs. So that's a holech al. This is called holech al arba, and that includes any types of beetles and anything that is similar to a beetle, and it has maybe even extra smaller legs, which are not its main legs to walk on. A mar beraglayim means a nadal. Nadal is like a centipede. And then it says ad kol, all the way up to. Now that means even though it's only domet to something which is domet, that's the ad kol. L'rabot kol et ha-dome v'et ha-dome le-dome, and therefore maybe it's not literally a centipede, but it's got like eight legs, 10 legs, not 100 legs also. Maybe all of its segments don't have legs. That's still included in a dome le-dome. All of those would be us. Tanya, I'm sure that as a result of all of this, you're wondering, why would you be allowed to eat the Leviathan if you're Zoche, just because HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives it a hechsher? As we know, we don't really trust everyone's hechsher. And where does it say that the Leviathan is kosher, for heaven's sakes? Maybe the whole thing was a fake out from the beginning to the end, and you end up with an unkosher fish after all of this work. So Tanya, Rabbi Yossi Ben Dormaski Tomer, I'll prove to you that the Leviathan is kosher. Leviathan Dark Tahoru, Shenemar, Ga'ava, Afikei Maganim. Look, when you're talking about in Eov a description of this incredible strength of the Leviathan, well, his big kayach, his Ga'ava, his very pride, is the power of the Maginim, his multiple shields. What do you think those shields are? Those are obviously the kaskasim, right? That's the armor that he's wearing. And tachtav chadudei cheres, under him, he's got such sharp pieces that they're like sharp broken pieces of pottery. So what is he referring to? Afike meganim refers to the kaskasim. And tachtav chadudei cheres refers to the snapirim, which proves that the Leviathan, which addresses Richie's deepest fears, the Leviathan is actually a dog tahar. And therefore, you can go back to checking those nets, Rich. If you catch a Leviathan, there's nothing to fear.
It's a well staked tonight, Rabbi. Well staked.
Adrenaloth, Elu Trefas.
Bleed nether.